evaluating modern textbooks. As we seek to apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life, we must consider education. Hosea 4 verse 6, we know the first part of it very well. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. But the whole verse is less known. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you as my priests. Because you've ignored the law of your God, I will also ignore your children. That's a terrifying verse. This is a really serious warning. To think that our failings and sins could affect our children and our grandchildren, that should really make us seriously stop and think. It is a serious thing to reject knowledge, to ignore knowledge and the law of God. And I think this verse could be written over a lot of the schools today. Not just the government schools either, by the way. Nearly five centuries ago, German reformer Professor Martin Luther warned, I'm much afraid that schools will prove to be wide gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not constantly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt. This is certainly true of our universities. I'm sorry to say it's true of many of our theological seminaries, which are becoming more like theological cemeteries too, where they're not constantly occupied with the Word of God. And so denominations go corrupt and worldly and secular and pagan because the theological seminaries have been allowed to stray from the Word of God. The Word of God is not just our anchor, it's our rock, our fortress. Anything else is shifting sand. Noah Webster, who's called the schoolmaster of the Republic, he defined education as this. Education is useless without the Bible. The Bible is America's basic textbook. In all fields, God's word contained in the Bible has furnished all necessary rules to direct our conduct. Honestly, when it comes to schools, if they reject the greatest man ever born, if they reject the greatest book ever written, what kind of education are they going to give? To have education without the Bible is worse than useless, actually. Our school campuses and our textbooks are a battleground. Indeed, education is a powerful tool. Education today is a real battleground, and we've seen it at UCT. In fact, University of Cape Town has been where things like roads must fall, fees must fall, culture must fall, paintings must fall. They have every kind of nonsense. Even before America started, they're ripping down Confederate statues. They started at University of Cape Town. University of Cape Town started this horrible trend of ripping down statues. And it started with them reckoning that how on earth could they have a statue to the founder of the university who paid for the whole thing. I was standing up at UCT just before it happened. It was the 1st of February 2015. And we had hired the trailer, the pro-life trailer, for the day. And so after our march to Parliament, March for Life, and our demonstration outside the Mary Stopes Abortuary, I decided we wanted some of the pictures. I mean, we were still paying for this trailer being towed around. So had it to come up at UCT to be parked at the foot of Germany Steps and then get a picture with the whole of Table Mountain behind and Jamison Hall and the steps. And I thought it would make a good picture. It did. But while I'm waiting for the truck and trailer to arrive, I was just amusing myself by asking people walking past, do you know whose statue this is here? No idea. And there they were, right at the bottom of Jamie Steps, overlooking the fields, and there's the statue of the founder of the university. And I asked people, lecturers, students walking past, nobody knew whose statue that was. Less than a month later, they were so traumatized by that statue, they couldn't study at the university till it was ripped down. Now, I mean, that just shows how this is as manufactured as it could possibly be. Freedom of speech and freedom of conscience is under fire on school and university campuses, which are meant to be free marketplace of ideas, where iron sharpens iron. Tolerance is beating freedom of speech to death on our university and college campus. In fact, you've probably got less freedom of speech on a university campus than you have almost anywhere else on the planet. I think that's the way it's become now. You are so shut down. You can have guest speakers coming in and they close them down, they demonstrate, they protest, they rip things to pieces, they bully, they cause riots, just to stop a outside guest speaker coming to the university campus. Today, the clear battle is between education and indoctrination. All education is inherently religious because it presents a certain perspective and selection of history and of values and of praxis, and it prescribes a worldview. So it's a lie to say, oh, we don't have religious worldviews on a campus. They do. Secular humanism is a religion. And to make secular humanism the only religion allowed on campus doesn't make it a non-religious education. It is a religious education. Secular humanism puts man where God should be. In fact, interestingly enough, if you go to the university campuses and you look under religions, you will find under religions the Atheist Club, the Humanist Society. You will even probably find the Pagan and the Wicca societies under religions. That's quite common. It used to be just, you know, Anglicans, Assemblies of God, Baptist, Brethren, so on, or, you know, Angsoc, Bapsoc. But now, in fact, for quite a while, the humanists and atheists have been having their societies listed amongst the religions. In America, they've got a category for tax-deductible religious organizations, and it's called a 501c3 status, that you get registered, that's that you can issue tax-deductible receipts. The Humanist Society, the Atheist Society, and a whole lot of others are registered as 501c3 tax-deductible status in America as religions. Everywhere that I've gone and I've checked university campuses, societies and clubs under religions, they put the Atheist Society, they put the Humanist Society in there. So don't be fooled when they say, we don't allow any religion on our campus. No, well, they've got a preferred religion. When you think of indoctrination, think Chinese foot binding. You heard about foot binding? You might have heard how this was fought against by Gladys Aylward, missionary to China. The Chinese really believed that all women must have tiny, tiny feet. My wife called them hooves. They bound their feet up so that they would have very tiny feet because it was considered very attractive in a woman to have these little stubs instead of proper feet. Now that's normal feet on the right, and that's a foot that's been bound on the left. Now if you've ever had an ill-fitting shoe, and you know how painful that can be, consider what it must be for some poor girl brought up in China. Millions of them had their feet bound like this, and this is how their feet became. They looked like almost horses' hooves and deformed. But think of the pain. I mean, if you've walked in a too tight, too small shoe or boot for a while, you know how bad that is. But, you know, the day ends and you can take the boot off, but that's bad. And then you get cultures where it's so important, because for beauty you need to have some clay pot welded into your lips and extended ears. And then there's the societies that believe that elongated heads are very attractive, and so they literally bind the heads to force the heads to grow in this way, and it's head binding. So constricting your foot or constricting your head in a certain way or creating extra long ear loops, this is considered beautiful in some cultures. And so you literally get some cultures where their heads are shaped like this. Now, that's a physical vision of what's being done today in education institutions. They are binding, guiding, directing, blinkering, contorting. In many classrooms today, I would say if you could see spiritually and intellectually what's being done, it's worse than what we've just shown on the foot binding in a spiritual, intellectual way. Some schools think that sitting on your desks and meditating and trying to find the God within you is more important than reading books and learning from objective history. You know, somehow or another, I don't need to look out there, and I don't need to look at nature, and I don't need to look into the Bible or the books for knowledge. I look within myself. Do you think that's education? Some people miss the reality of what's going on. I mean, there they are all looking out there at some, maybe some elephants in the distance, and they don't see the one right behind them. This is an even funnier one. Here you've got the the tour guide explaining in the game reserve, if you look over there in the distance, under that tree, you can see a lion in the shade, and I miss the one right next to him. He's probably looking, thinking, oh, that's just my brother. Instead of education teaching people how to think critically, we now mostly have indoctrination teaching students what to think. Repeat after me, you know, this is it. Even Albert Einstein said, education is not the learning of facts, but the training of the mind to think. And I should say, to think critically. Thankfully, I had a history teacher like that. My first history teacher in high school in Bulawayo, Milton High School, was Mr. Rhys Davies, who was a Member of Parliament as well. And when I asked, "Sir, how can you be a Member of Parliament and a school teacher?" said, "We don't get paid for being Members of Parliament. We need a real job as well." That's the way it used to be. You didn't used to get paid for being a city councillor. You didn't used to get paid for being a Member of Parliament. It was an honorary position. Davy Crockett, I think, was one of the famous congressmen in America. And he was a pretty poor man. He didn't get rich being a congressman. In fact, you were not meant to get any remuneration for being a congressman. And now it's a get-rich-quick scheme. But my teacher taught me, beware the victor's version. Never, ever regurgitate the textbook. Peacetime textbooks, wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. Think outside the box. Always ask why, what's the context? And so he taught me to think critically, which got me into trouble when I came to South African schools because I would challenge a teacher and question things, and they took offence that how dare you question the textbook or the curriculum or the teacher. But that's what I was taught in Rhodesia. We were meant to question everything. And the classroom should be a place where you are not only taught to think but encouraged to think, even if you're going down a dead-end street cul-de-sac, let the student do it to realise the consequences. And it's not bad to have people express even views that you know to be wrong, because then it can be discussed and explored. So, you send your kids to school to read, write, and do arithmetic. What you don't realise is you're allowing the enemy to conform and indoctrinate your child to the lies of the state. The amount of parents say, "I want my child to get the education I never had." Well, you can be sure they're getting the education you never had. The education I got was fairly good, just still the old school classical type of education. But you can't compare what they teach in classroom today with that, because what were my textbooks? Shakespeare, Jane Austen, George Orwell, Charles Dickens, 1984, Animal Farm. I mean, that's the kind of books we studied at school in Rhodesia. So we were really understanding about the dangers of government and communism and so on. What are they getting in school today? Harry Potter. Have you seen the junk that they've got? In Gauteng, their education department's got practicals like this. Plan a bank robbery. Work out your getaway cars, weapons you're going to use. This. I mean, we don't have enough bank robbers, obviously, so a good practical. Make a spell. Cast a spell on someone you don't like. You know, what would the ingredients be and so on. Write out the incantation. These are education English practicals. And what animal would you like to shapeshift into? What would you like to be reincarnated into? And things like this. What's that got to do with English? In fact, the most radical department on any campus, almost anywhere, is English literature. Don't think they're studying Shakespeare and Jane Austen. If they are, they're injecting everything from Marxism, feminism, you name it, into which the author never meant. But that doesn't matter. You've got an English literature department that's been hijacked by some of those radical extremists out there, revolutionaries even. And it's got no basis in the subject, but they've just hijacked these subjects. In the Marxist Manifesto, or the Communist Manifesto, written by Karl Marx in 1848, amongst the things required there is state control of education, state monopoly of education, state writing of textbooks, state licensing of teachers, compulsory education in state schools. Now, up till then, the state had nothing to do with education. Education was entirely in the hands of the church and missions and monasteries, voluntary, private, home education, tutors. The state getting involved in education, you can basically date back to 1848 and the Communist Manifesto. And this is a key part of the communist goal. Education of this generation will morph into government of the next generation. John Dewey, who is like the father of so much of America's state schools right now, radical humanist, signatory of the Humanist Manifesto, one of the most evil people imaginable in education, and he shaped the modern National Education Association of America, NEA, as has been put here. Samuel Blumenfeld is a Jewish unbeliever who, because he is interested in education, studied education, he discovered when it looks to education for all roads lead to John Calvin. He ended up being converted, became a Reformed Christian, and he wrote books like the NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education. Samuel Blumenfeld, you can get a lot of good things from him. And there's no doubt this, you know, remember what the Trojan horse did? Came inside and destroyed the greatest city in the world at that time through deception. Through deception. They brought this in, think it was a peace offering, it brought it inside, and little did they know that there was a group of soldiers hidden inside who spread out when everyone was asleep at night and destroyed the city. Destroyed everything, killed everyone. Common Core is something that Clinton pushed, and also extremely, extremely bad how to basically collectivize and socialize America's education system. Now, somebody challenged me to this. Google, school makes me, and what comes up? Depressed, suicidal, anxious, cry, feel stupid, sick, so tired, sad, tired, so stressed. Try it. What's going on in schools is pretty bad. Now, I remember my son Calvin joined me on a speaking tour around the country quite a few times, and we went to a mission station, and when we got there, after I spoke at the assembly, my son asked, could he stay in the school and see what goes on in the classroom? I mean, he's homeschooled. He's, you know, all these people wearing uniforms, standing in line, looked very interesting. So, sure, no problem. So I went to the radio station. I recorded about an hour of programs. When I came out, I went to get a picture of my son sitting in a school desk, and he was nowhere to be seen. So I asked the teacher, where is my son? And they said, oh, he asked if he could go to the library. Okay, so I went to the library and asked the librarian if he'd seen my son. Said, he came in for a few minutes and he left. And I thought, clever boy. Two steps to freedom. Can I go to the library? And then the librarian knows nothing about Orphe. So I walk outside thinking, I wonder where he is. And at that moment, I heard screams of excitement and delight. There's Calvin in the back of a motorbike with his hands up like this, and they're roaring down the dirt track. And he had escaped. So late that night, I got hold of him again. I said, so what happened? He said, they wanted me to sit in a desk and be quiet. I said, Calvin, they sentenced kids to 12 years of that. It's inhuman. I mean, it's absolutely wicked. You force some poor kid to sit in a desk. Now, I think it's bad enough for the girls, but girls adapt to schools and classroom and desks better than boys. For boys, it's torture. The whole education system is anti-male. Absolute torture. The way you learn is by clambering, climbing, exploring, jumping, fighting, getting bruised, cut, and all the rest of it. For boys to learn sitting in a desk is absolutely traumatic. And I think it just kills their desire for knowledge and so on. There's no exploration. The best way to learn is to be out there in the creek, scraping through. I mean, I've taken my grandsons out there, and there they are, finding these tadpoles and catching them. They're just so excited about all the creepy, crawly movie things out there. That's how you learn. You don't learn by some teacher saying, shut up and get into your textbook and so on. It's horrific. So why do I have to go to school? Well, if your mother was honest, she'd say something like, so you can be molded into a state-approved homogenous drone that cannot think outside the prescribed consensus. You will learn to repeat information instead of how to think for yourself so that you don't become a threat to the status quo. When you graduate, you'll get a job, pay your taxes in order to perpetuate the corporate system of indentured servitude. And that would be a fairly honest, concise answer why we have to go to school. I don't like using the word homeschooling. I prefer home education, because schooling has nothing to do with education. You might be schooled but not educated. You might be educated but never gone to school. Come away from the window. You don't want to be a child left behind, do you? That's a Hillary Clinton term. No child left behind. Don't know what they mean by left behind, but it's in a sense of you've got to be into the state indoctrination gulag where they suck your brains out and pump it full of garbage. And yeah, I mean, this is kind of where it ends up. And brainwashing indoctrination. When we get done with you, not only will you have a slim chance of finding work, but you'll not be able to think for yourself to save your life, which is true. How did they manage to get the bulk of the world's population to play the masquerade madness, lockdown lunacy, and salvation by vaccination game in this COVID cult? I think the schools did a lot of the work of, you know, line up, roll up your sleeve, take the jab, don't ask what's in it. Don't ask if it's good for you. Now, you expect this in Red China. You expect this in North Korea. What you don't expect is this kind of indoctrination in the free, democratic Western countries. But instead of saying school ahead, indoctrination center ahead would be more honest. And what do we now have in schools? Bible clubs and others being threatened, sued, people getting in serious intimidation. I mean, it's like you've committed a major thought crime if you try to have a Bible club or a prayer group at school. And then you get these parents who send their kids off to the government school saying, oh, we send little Billy to government school so he can be a missionary there. Well, how well is that working out? You know, after you've trained a soldier, to send him into battle is one thing. But you don't send your kids into battle before they've been trained. It doesn't seem right to send some young little kid into a state school where you've got some university graduated teacher and think that your little six-year-old is going to be able to outwit this university graduated secular humanist who's got to make him conform. And so, yes, they call it education, but is it education? A lot of what's going on is actually nothing but indoctrination. More than that, there are books now pointing out that a lot of the education going on today, so-called education, is a scam. It's a marketing scam. They are marketing education. They're marketing it, and you're paying a fortune. Now, I've lost track of how much it costs, but something like 20-odd years ago, there was an article I read in America that I spent $85,000 to send my child to hell. I don't know what it costs now, but I do know that people paying off their college loans years later. I don't know what it costs in South Africa, but about 10 years ago, I had Taryn do a research, and she worked out something like the average university education cost about 125,000 rand. And what did it achieve? Well, let me tell you, if you've got a degree in gender studies and critical race theory and things like this, it's not going to really help you with your finding a career. So there's a lot of people who went from school into apprenticeship and are earning very, very well without massive college debts to pay off. Then you've got people who went to university at great expense to their parents and everyone else, took out loans maybe, and of course the taxpayers subsidized it, and they got some gender studies or whatever, political science degree, and not only don't they have a decent job, but their life's a mess. While they're at college, they've gone to drugs and everything else. And so how much of this is real? Some college education may prepare someone. Engineering faculty is probably a serious faculty. Agricultural is probably a serious faculty. But do we really need more political science graduates? Does Africa need another poet? What we need is engineers, and we need people who are excellent farmers and agriculturists. But what we don't need is what most of them are getting. Do you know, in Austria, for example, where my wife grew up, they start to stream you from grade four. And so this person is going into hospitality industry, or they're going into carpentry, or to be an electrician and so on. And they're learning all those skills. By the time they graduate from school, they have skills, they have experience, they can do things. Our guys are prepared as though everybody is going to go to university and get a political science degree. And it's kind of, which we don't need, and it's not going to help the economy. And at the end of it, what do they know? Not much that's useful. Now, I had a pretty classical education, but even in Rhodesia, with a pretty classical education, we had to do woodwork. I've still got woodwork things I did, and it still works, and I can stand it and it doesn't break. 40-something years later, we had to do metalwork for at least 1 year. We had to do commerce for at least 1 year. I don't think I learned much there, but I did learn something: never get in debt, never hire purchase, which is very good advice. We had shooting, we had drilling, we had cadets every Friday. We had bushcraft. A week a year, we'd be shipped off to game reserve, and the game ranger would teach us how to survive in the bush. Bushcraft, survival, tracking, anti-tracking, direction finding, how to get food, water, and shelter at night in the bush, and things like this, how to find your way by the stars. This is part of our schooling. And so I came out of school in Rhodesia knowing a few basic things, like how to kill people efficiently and things like that. Things, skills that can help you in life. How to make things, how to actually nail things. But what good do you get if you go to the average school today? I mean, what do they learn? They learn a hang of a lot about sex education and gender studies and the right pronoun to use for some of the 65 genders out there. But what are they learning that's actually going to help them? They might now know cantations on. But what they've done is they've now marketed education, and people think it's worth this incredibly overpriced amount. And where does it get them? Well, I think our universities are destroying our society, personally. In fact, the public schools are taking people of real diversity and turning them into conformity. In fact, you can see it's not evolution, now it's now devolution. People are going from being able to think down to where their brain is kind of locked. Definition of stupid is knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies. And we have a lot of lies. There's now a book out called The Dumbest Generation. You might have heard in America they speak about those who came out of the Second World War as the greatest generation, which was cooked up by an antichrist pagan at Hollywood. I think it's pathetic mentality to think that the Second World War generation, who came back from saving the Soviet Union and destroying Europe, that generation who allowed the taking of the Bible out of schools, the abolishing of prayer out of schools, the Ten Commandments taken out, who allowed the legalization of abortion, they're the greatest generation in history. Much better than the pioneers and the people who opened up the frontier and the Pilgrim Fathers, and much greater than the reformers and all. The greatest generation are the ones who saved Stalin's bacon, saved the Soviet Union, and let America be hijacked by a bunch of pagans and legalize abortion, which killed, 60 million American babies before they finally reversed Roe v. Wade? How's that the greatest generation? So I think, speaking about the dumbest generation, how the digital age is stupefying young Americans and jeopardizing our future. Or don't trust anyone under 30. That's a bit sad. But what on earth is going on in our schools? What on earth is going on in our minds? What on earth is going on? I would say, this isn't just America, this is South Africa too. The government curriculum is designed to dumb down the students, make them thick. In fact, some of the answers are dumber than dumb. And some of the... We used to have essays. Now they've only got multiple choice. The problem is not people being uneducated. The problem is they're educated just enough to believe what they've been taught and not educated enough to question what they have been taught. Modern education is creating people smart enough to repeat what they've been told and follow orders, and dumb enough to think this makes them smarter than everyone else. That black mortarboard and gown does not make you more intelligent, nor does that scroll there put in your hand. If we are to avoid a future of cultural separatism in this country, it's imperative that we end the systematic indoctrination of teachers and students. It's not just the students who've been indoctrinated. The teachers have too. And the teachers aren't just the villains. The teachers are also the victims in many cases. They're the products of the same system. They can't think outside the box. Think simple tools for brain surgery. Plato wrote 2,400 years ago, "Strange times are these in which we live. When old or young are taught falsehoods in school, and a person that dares to tell the truth is called at once a lunatic and a fool." Has human nature changed that much in the last 2,400 years? Aristotle said, "Tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society." And that is the problem. What is the main virtue in our present society? Tolerance. And of course, apathy. So what? Who cares? And so on. So the seven pillars of ignorance are ideology, especially Marxism, incompetence, think ANC affirmative action, nepotism, think ANC, unaccountability, think ANC, laziness, I think you can think every government department out there, arrogance, all the university graduates, and corruption. Something like a third of the total GDP of Africa is stolen by governments through corruption. One third of the GDP, gross domestic product, stolen by corruption. These are the seven pillars of ignorance. To make people more ignorant, we have organizations like UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization, all over Africa and Asia, maybe even South America. UNESCO provides textbooks. So I've been sitting with presidents of countries. Like, I was sitting there with the president of Zambia speaking about you need to change your textbooks. He said, "Oh, we can't. Why not? UNESCO provides them free." But UNESCO's textbooks are evolutionism, situation ethics, Marxism, everything bad. But they're free. Yes, but they are dumbing down the population of Zambia. They're undermining the whole project of turning Zambia into a Christian country. But UNESCO provides these textbooks to us free. But it's slavery. It's better for Zambia to produce their own textbooks. You don't want UNESCO textbooks, but UNESCO provides them free. Did I mention free? It's not really free, actually. Of course, a whole lot of people have to pay for it, probably American taxpayers. They pay most of the UN's budget, it seems. But UNESCO is enslaving the next generation of Africa, undermining our churches and our future by ensuring that their secular humanist, situation ethics, evolutionary textbooks are in the schools in Africa, destroying and undermining so much of what we're doing, unless we move out of the government schools. Well, of course, if the governments would just get rid of the UNESCO textbooks, bring in God-honoring textbooks, that would, of course, be a lot better. And so, world history. What does this cover tell you? You can sometimes tell something about a book that's coming. The most important thing in world history is the Greco-Roman civilization, evidently, which you might notice wasn't Christian. The Taj Mahal, which is nothing other than a glorified tomb for one of the thousand or so wives of Shah Khan. Here we got this man. You've had pictures of Princess Diana in front of the Taj Mahal saying, "The Princess of Hearts in front of the greatest monument to true love in the world." The greatest monument to true love in the world. This man had over 1,000 wives and who knows how many hundreds of concubines, and all the workers that assembled this, he had their right hands cut off after doing it so that they could never be used to build another building again. I don't know that this is a monument to true love. I would say it's a monument to a lot of evil, but sigh. And okay, let's see. Who are the most important people in history? Cleopatra, fair enough. Julius Caesar, okay. Queen Elizabeth I, probably. And not sure who this is. Oh, you know this guy? So that's the most important people representative of history. World history. This is a Christian school textbook. The B-17 bomber, of which about 50,000 were made, which incinerates its cities with 1,000 bomber raids, killing millions of people. This is symbolic of world history. The best picture for a cover of a Christian school textbook. One world history textbook had 36 pages praising Islam and less than half a page on Christianity, mostly attacking it, by the way. It's about the only thing that's happened in Christian history is the Crusades and the Inquisition. You look at this one, and what's the most important thing in world history? According to DK, well, obviously Nelson Mandela, Queen Elizabeth I, Lord Kitchener, the architect of the concentration camps and scorched earth in South Africa, of course Tutankhamun, Mahatma Gandhi, well, gee, who else did more to make the world a better place than Mahatma Gandhi? And, of course, Buddha, someone on the moon, apparently, and what else is important here? Oh, helicopters, fair enough. So, can you spot anything Christian in this cover? Okay, here's the most important Americans in history. Who's the highest up? Michael King. Who's the biggest? Franklin Delano Roosevelt, probably the worst president in American history. And so these are the most important Americans. I would have expected a cowboy, a pilgrim, you know, people like that. Maybe George Whitefield, you know, Jonathan Edwards, but nope. This is these, and by the way, this is a Christian school textbook. Sigh. Well, at least Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln's obviously got to be there. MLK obviously has to be there. George Washington, well, he was fairly significant. But spot the Christians. I mean, where's the somebody who looks like he might be a cowboy? But it makes you wonder who designs these covers. Who's heard of the Frankfurt School? Okay. The Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism utilized what they called the Gramsci strategy, which is also known as the Termite strategy. These are very important people. The Frankfurt School consists of Herbert Marcuse, for example. Now, Herbert Marcuse taught that the Frankfurt School, understand, is the Marxists who were trying to work out how to take over the world, the West in particular, recognizing that revolution wouldn't probably work. They came to the conclusion that Karl Marx got, or should say Vladimir Lenin got lucky. Vladimir Lenin got very lucky. There was a correlation of forces that brought about the First World War and the toppling of the Romanov dynasty, the Tsar in Russia, but we're not likely to get this chance again. The way we're going to get the West is far too Christian. We need to Marxize the inner man. We need to undermine the cultural pillars of the West. So amongst them, Herbert Marcuse taught the way to undermine Christianity in the West is to take over the culture, the arts and culture, the music, and make it celebrate ugliness and distortion and not have everything being meaningful, and to be able to particularly bring obscenity and vulgarity and blasphemy into the arts and the plays, that people will be able to use swearing and blasphemy as verbal grenades against the bourgeois to bring them down. Now, it included a whole lot of other horrible people. George Lucas, not to be confused with the one who made Star Wars, is another George Lucas, and said, we must organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, after they've corrupted all its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat. So the Frankfurt School's Marxists, we often call them cultural Marxists, and these were people who were first initially in Frankfurt, but then they were expelled when the nationalists took over Germany in the 1930s, and so the Frankfurt School moved into Harvard and Princeton, and they hijacked most of America, and certainly Hollywood and the education system. So the Frankfurt School, one of the most prominent of them was Antonio Gramsci. Now, Gramsci articulated what he called the termite strategy. Termites eat out the heart of a building that's made of wood. So you can imagine these wooden pillars here. If you had termites inside them, or beetles, they could burrow their way on the insides. And so his idea was, we need to be like cultural termites eating the heart out of every pillar of Western civilization till the whole edifice collapses. We're going to work till the edifice of Western civilization is corrupted, rotted, and destroyed. And so the main aims of the Frankfurt School was to create racism as an offense, to continually change to create confusion. There must be continual change. By the way, do you know, for almost all of history, young children wore the same clothes, style of clothes, as their parents wore. It's only since the Second World War, since 1950s, that you started to get children dressing different from their parents. Different style, different fashion. Fashions, it used to be that the father's dress and the son's dress and the mother's and daughter's dress looked exactly the same. But that was one of the changes, that you had to create a distinction, division between the ages. The teaching of sex and homosexuality to children, pervert the children, groom them, undermining of schools and teachers' authority, huge immigration to destroy national identities, multiculturalism, Babylon again, Tower of Babel, the promotion of excessive drinking, as people who drunk can't think very straight, emptying of churches, and never have they been more successful emptying churches than through the COVID cult lockdown lunacy, and then organize an unreliable legal system with bias towards the victims of the crime. Get people to lose all confidence and trust in a criminal justice system. Make people more dependent on the state or state benefits, welfare and so on. Control and dumb down the media. In fact, right now, the cultural Marxists of Frankfurt School control all six of the corporations that control all the mass media in America. We've got six companies that control all the mass media in America, and they're all controlled by cultural Marxists. Encouraging the breakdown of the family, family's basic building block society. Abolish differences in education of boys and girls. When I went to school, you had girls' schools and you had boys' schools. And in Rhodesia, I don't even know if there was a co-ed school. Certainly, I never came across one. And it was less distracting. You focused on education. The main thing was education. And, of course, there's different types of education. There's different types of sports. Now they even want to obliterate the distinction between women's sports and men's sports, which is extremely unfair. Girls have spent their whole life preparing for excelling in their sport, now can be beaten by some male who identifies as a woman who comes. The whole purpose of having a separate sports was to bring out the best and have everyone to try and achieve their best. Women are oppressed class, men are oppressors, and so on. Now, these are some of what the cultural Marxists decide to do. Goal, secularizing of society. The goal, to sideline Christianity, to deal with all issues without reference to the Bible. So, as Antonio Gramsci said, and Antonio Gramsci was the founder of the Communist Party of Italy. He said we must Marxize the inner man. We must get people in the West to think about every issue, not in relationship to the Bible of Christ, but without reference to the Bible of Christ. We've got to Marxize the inner man. We've got to get them to the point where they not only don't think in a Christian way, but they think in an anti-Christian way. And have certainly succeeded in doing that. Save the planet by putting the Bible in the bin. That's a sticker produced by these characters. And of course, there's a lot of outward hostility to Christianity. And as a result, they've got a lot of people happy to make stands like going to hell and proud. I don't think pride's going to help them at all. If Jesus returns, kill him again. See, put Christianity in a bin. This is somebody smilingly has got to undo Jesus. Jesus will return. And this creep is going to be calling for the mountains to fall on him to hide him from the wrath of the Lamb. He's not going to be trying to backchat the Creator and the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords on the Day of Judgment. You can be sure of that. But this is the arrogance that's being encouraged by the critical theories of the Marcusean and the Gramsci strategy. So Marxists identify five primary cultural transforming institutions for infiltration and subversion. Education, of course. Entertainment, yes. News media, definitely. As you know, the media is not a reflection of reality. Just take this one example. Anyone recognize where this is? What this is? Why this is? This is January 2015. After the Charlie Hebdo massacres, some journalists were blasphemous, and they'd done lots of anti-Christian blasphemous cartoons, and then they did one that was against Muhammad, and before you knew it, jihadists came and shot up this place, and as a result, 17 heads of state led over 1 million people in Paris in a protest. Charlie Hebdo massacres, this is January 2015, you might recall. When I saw this picture, I looked at this and I thought, this is incredible. This must be a security nightmare. You've got Netanyahu, you've got Francois Hollande, you've got Angela Merkel, the heads of 17 countries leading 1 million people in Paris. I thought, how did the security people allow this? How could they protect them? I mean, it looks impressive. But here's the perspective. This is the group. You can see the security around. This is a blocked off street. They gave the impression, maybe 1 million people did march in Paris. I don't know. But these people weren't leading it. But the media put out the falsehood that these leaders were so unconcerned about their own safety and security, they were leading 1 million people down the streets of Paris. Fake. Well, here's another classic one. Notice the journalist crouching down here, the journalist, photojournalist. There's Obama. This is in Dar es Salaam this is 2013, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And Obama's pictured walking through this crowd, shaking hands, obviously not afraid for his own safety, and wow, what a popular present. Until you look from a perspective, these the crowds are only two or three deep and all dressed the same and they've all got the same hats and they've got these same flags, interspersed American and Tanzanian flags, and there's security all around and security is standing behind and so on. But this is rent-a crowd. This is completely a false impression. This is how fake the media can be. So, education, entertainment, news media, and fourthly, religious institutions. And fifthly, political institutions. These are the five culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions targeted for infiltration. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. 2 Chronicles 19:2. The Marxist revolutionaries identify the stages of operation for ideological subversion as demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. Now this is Yuri Bezmenov, ex-KGB, defected in 1984, and he came to the West and he is warning us how communists subvert societies. Demoralization, educate an entire generation in Marxist ideology, demoralize them. Destabilize the economy, the foreign relations and defense systems. Create crisis, violent changes of power, structure, economy, riots and so on. And then normalization, a period of stability to calm people down until your next cycle. The highest art of warfare, he said, is not to fight at all, but to subvert everything of value in the country of your enemy, until such a time that the perception of reality of your enemy is screwed up to such an extent he does not perceive you as an enemy. You can take your enemy without a single shot being fired. Has that not been happening all over the world? They are demoralizing in religion, in education, in media, in culture. They're undermining structures of law and order and social relations and security, and they are undermining even life itself. Family, health, race, population, labor, all these are being targeted for demoralization. For example, in the United States of America, they have been pulling down monuments of great people like Jefferson Davis here in New Orleans and General Beauregard in New Orleans. This all taking place in 2017. Taking down magnificent monuments which were put up at great expense and sacrifice by previous generations to remind us of important things in our history. Robert E. Lee, one of the most respected characters in American history, should be on the cover of any American history book. Now they're taking down his monument. And this reminds you of what George Orwell warned about in his book 1984. Every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book has been rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. The process is continuing, day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. Does that not ring a bell? Written in 1948 in a book called 1984, does that not depict where we are right now, or at least where people would like to take us? Everything faded in the past. The past was erased. The erasure was forgotten. The lie became truth. This is written by a man who was working for the BBC in the propaganda industry of Britain in the Second World War, who used to be a hardcore communist. The only hands the left can play is Islamophobia, misogyny, homophobe, racist. That's why we need to read old books to learn from people who built up civilization rather than those who tear it down. You notice in this mission we believe in books, old books, historic books, before political correctness. You can lead a man to knowledge, but you cannot make him think. We must never tolerate evil, for first evil is tolerated, then it's embraced, then it's hailed as being good, then it becomes unlawful to do what's actually good. According to atheists, teaching your children about God is child abuse. But teaching your children to twerk at sexually explicit gay parades is normal. The lunatics are running the asylum. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you're crossing over to possess. That you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commands, which I command you. You and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly as the Lord your God, the God of your fathers, promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets before your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. That is Deuteronomy chapter 6. Any questions, any comments? Evaluating textbooks. Yes, Caleb.
People nowadays, when they send their kids to school, they pretty much think that they're going to get like a good education and stuff. Mommy was saying that many people don't realize that they can't just send their kids to school and go to work and come back. The kids don't have any, like, they don't interact with the parents at all. And then the kids get brought up the way the school wants, and the parents don't necessarily have a say in the matter.
And no.
She's like, if you're sending your kids to school, you still need to sit down with them, you still need to do all this biblical stuff to get them to think right, be able to think, and be able to stand out.
In fact, it might work out to be more work to send your children to government school and be a diligent parent, because if you to check out the textbooks and try and counteract all the negative being given by the state teachers and the state schools and so on, that could be more trouble than just protecting them from it and giving them some good education instead. It's very dangerous what's going on. You used to be able to trust the teachers. And there might still be some schools where you can. But it's becoming few and far between. There are some very dedicated teachers out there and some dedicated individual principals. But they're the exception, and they're going against the tide, and the tide is against. It's very hard. And you should be able to trust them. And it's your tax money and school fees that's going to them, and yet they are deliberately working against the children to such extent during the lockdown lunacy. They then were getting upset that some parents were seeing what they were teaching because it was now online, and getting outraged that the parents shouldn't be allowed to see what we're teaching the children in their own home with their own computers. But what was going on in the classroom, the parents should know about too. And yet they will go to ridiculous extents that you must give permission for a panado to be given to the child. But they could whisk off your child for an abortion without the parents knowing about it. This is the kind of insanity going on in our schools. They will mess with the child's mind and not think they need to check this out to the parents or even phone them afterwards. But then they'll make a big show of... I remember just one point at when one of my daughters was at a state school very, very, very early on before we went into homeschooling. And next thing, school got all worked up and warned that a child who was given Ritalin every day had given a Ritalin tablet to my daughter who had taken it. And they will make a big thing about, you know, having to inform us of the fact that she got some Ritalin. Well, you know, honestly, I just love this with schools in America. Drug-free zone. Line up here for your Ritalin. What do I think Ritalin is? Of course it's a drug, honestly. But I mean, this mentality, we're drug-free zone, you queue up to get your drugs to dumb down and calm down the boys because they're energetic. So I had a pediatrician tell my wife that my sons need to be put in Ritalin. And the next thing was, he said, it would help if you put your husband on Ritalin too. Yeah, yes.
Dr. Hammond, do you remember when we marched against outcomes-based education?
Yes.
There was a good turnout. There were thousands of people.
Yes.
And I remember we prayed with Parliament. We were waiting for someone from education that we could hand over our...
Petition.
Mm. And a man came out, and he was so scared. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to pray. And that's what he was scared of. And he also liked that. and we prayed. That's all we did.
Mm.
And the education department has been coming a long time, undermining, and parents are responsible for their children's education.
You can delegate some of the task of education, but you cannot ever delegate the responsibility. If I delegate to a teacher, it's my duty to supervise to ensure that teacher's not wrongfully influencing children. Now, if you want to get inspired, there's a lot of people rising up in America, and they have school boards, and the parents can go to school boards and complain. Now, these school boards in America have in many cases been hijacked by hardcore Marxists. And now there's been an awakening, and I think in Florida, Governor DeSantis sounded the alarm, and a lot of parents have taken back these school boards and made sure that they get people who've got the best interests of the children at heart, because they've discovered during the lockdown how much, not just hardcore racism, critical race theory, but hardcore sex perversion, grooming, LGBTQ. And so parents have been outraged. I mean, absolute total pornography along the line of, what did they call it? They're trying to bring in their, in South Africa, tried to bring it in 2020.
Comprehensive sexuality education,
CSE. Absolutely vile. And so there's been rebellion in the ranks, and you should hear some of these parents telling the school governing boards off. And so the school governing boards then apparently appealed to the FBI, and the FBI then put out threats that parents who challenged school boards would be labeled as terrorists. And this was also a scandal that got out there, that the FBI started to bully parents for having just asked questions which made the school board uncomfortable. In fact, Ryan, as you're a teacher in America, anything you want to add at this point?
Your assessment of American education is spot on. The public schools are a cesspool to their morality and Marxist indoctrination. The private schools, the secular private schools, are the exact same. Christian schools are, some good Christian schools out there. There's a growing classical education movement in the United States, both for home education and for brick and mortar schools. That's doing good work. But yes, the FBI has declared parents who want to oversee their child's education as potential domestic terrorists, along with evangelical Christians. They're also on the domestic terrorist watch list.
Yep. Yes.
Just the thing, last year I did a Christian Cambridge online school, and we had to write a debate about, I think it was, we could choose two reviews and then about how the world started. And obviously I'm on the Christian side, so I chose the Christian side, and then we had to debate evolution versus the Christian view. And they gave us some videos to go to watch just about different views, or both views, and then to go debate and write an essay about it. And the one video was, I was like astounded. It's literally, it's a fish, and then our hands evolved from the fish's fins, and our backbone from some other thing. And I was like, how on earth can someone that's, like, we're intelligent people, and how can you believe this? It's insane. No.
But were you free to give your perspective?
Yeah, we were free to give our opinions.
And you don't think you'll be marked down for that?
I wasn't marked down, but a very high mark.
Good. Well, it's nice to know that Cambridge still got some standards in. Nice. Another comment?
Just reading for people that are going to school. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablets of your heart. And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God. Amen. That's more or less what we need to do.
Yes. Everything we think with the mind, everything we do with the hand should be governed by the word of God. So Deuteronomy 6 is super important. Any other comments, questions? Ryan?
Is age segregation, both in schools and in churches, a part of Marxist conspiracy to destroy education and to retard the maturity of our youth?
Yes, I believe so. Historically, single school classrooms were the norm. And my wife, even in Austria, was she had four grades in one classroom. They didn't, they worked their way around. I think they had a shortage of teachers, whatever the reason was. But the idea of this rigid age segregation is very new, and it comes from evolutionary ideas. So it's secular humanism, the idea that you've got to have rigid age segregation. So the church through the ages has tended to work in all ages for Sunday morning worship. And when it comes to catechism, you might have had in general groupings of ages, but it would be multiplicity. But this idea that, you know, I'm a grade five, I can only talk to people who are grade five, and, you know, well, grade 12s don't talk to grade 11s. I mean, it's ridiculous. Nowhere in life do you have it like that. And so in all of life, people of all ages, there's people older than you, younger than you, and people double your age, and, you know, and that's normal. But this rigid age segregation is for control and, you know, divide and control. It's very much an evolutionary idea. So we shouldn't get too worked up about the age segregation. I mean, in a sense, we shouldn't be adopting it.
What can we do about tertiary education? Because that is, I mean, we can still at home educate. We can still send to a hopefully Christian private school. But what do we do about tertiary education? How do we get our children qualified,
yes,
you know, in a good way?
That's where we've got to be very selective to find good Christian universities or colleges.
There aren't
many. No, it's pretty bad. On that occasion, we can be using some of the online options. Avril, what would you recommend? Now, Avril's parents pioneered theocentric Christian education, which is the finest and oldest home education system in South Africa. What would you recommend people seeking tertiary education?
You've got a brilliant system here. I would say your seminars and courses like this one are incredible. They're worth more than a university education. Also, you have your online programs.
Yes, the William Carey Bible Institute.
And that's excellent. And actually, everything you've produced is worth way more than anything else I've seen. You're kind of stuck if you want to go into medicine, I suppose, and you have to go through the universities.
There are some where, yes, like engineering and medicine, that there's no doubt you've got to work through this. The problem is you've got, for example, Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, has put how many billions of dollars into university medical schools? Over 480 odd medical schools around the world, including UCT, UWC, Stellenbosch, University of the Free State, Witwatersrand. They are putting millions into every one of these universities, specifically in the realms of medical, and it's always on the vaccine training for the doctors. So they basically have prostituted the medical profession, where the people promoting the vaccines are determining the curriculums in those universities. It's shocking. Conflict of interest.
Doctors don't get educated in vaccines. That's why they couldn't stand when the COVID happened.
Yeah.
Doctors don't get it. Public health officials get vaccine because it is a primary health care thing in South Africa. So the sister gives the injection. So it's not doctors. Doctors don't know. They know very little about vaccines because it is a public health thing. So that is where the big problem was. You asked your doctor and he didn't know about COVID.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to advise you. People were waiting for information. Eventually, I got stuff from the frontline doctors in America. What do you take? How do you help someone with COVID? Everyone was sitting it out.
Yeah.
No one knew. And people were dying because of that. We had someone in our congregation, she had it in 2020, about December, Heidi Anthony. She sat at home for 6 weeks waiting to die. And we were praying for her, encouraging her, getting her to just take something for the temperature, you know? Do something basic like that. People were so scared because of the, obviously, the media, that everyone was talked into a dying, basically. And that was all working together. But the general medical system in South Africa failed us. There were a few people who stood up and had some background and could think for themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the problem we're dealing with.
We are.
People don't think.
But also there's been a lot of brainwashing and indoctrination in the universities. And when you realize that Big Pharma has co-opted and bribed universities to adopt their curriculums, so it's pretty bad. Taryn Hodgson, who worked here for 15 years, she came here at the beginning of 2006, did her first BWS with us, and she said after a week of a biblical worldview seminar, she said, I just specialized, got a major in education in history at Rhodes University. 4 years studying history at Rhodes University. She said, I learned more history in last week here than I did in the last 4 years at Rhodes University. That's pretty sad commentary on the state of our universities, that they can say they're teaching you history and you don't actually learn much about history at all. And English literature, my daughter Andrea loves English literature, looked around and thought, if she went up the hill, UCT does anything but English literature. Under the name of English literature, they teach you everything but the subject. It's just staggering. So our education institutions have been corrupted. But this is the Gramsci strategy. This is exactly what the cultural Marxist, the Frankfurt School, gave.